I just realized how ignorant, or yeah, ignorant maybe is the nicer way to put it, how ignorant we modern day Western culture oriented mindset has become, so detached from our environment and so forgetful of human traditions that, and also coming from the fact that, you know, our cultures initially developed very isolated from each other, and by the time we mixed, we really didn't bother to study each other. We just, you know, wiped out the Native American culture, and that was the end of that. And we did it by degree, by introducing the horse, you know, by coming, conquistadors, you know, and wiping out a large part of the population with our germs, and whoever survived started to use the wild horses that got out. They started to get a hold of them and decided, hey, we're not going to be farmers anymore. We're going to go hunt buffalo and become nomadic. Well, before the white man had arrived, the Native American had been agrarian. They were not hunter and gatherers, at least not all of them. See, when you hunt and gather, you gather plant food, but you also hunt for game because you don't plant anything. You don't grow anything. Everything is wildcrafted. And so they had to get their B12 from somewhere, so it had to be from wild game. But when the Native American culture became agrarian, they became vegan. Nobody has bothered to ask the question, how is it they could do that for generation after generation, or even one generation, let alone multiple, without succumbing to B12 neural degeneration symptoms? How could they do? And we're so ignorant, we had to send, in our modern era, in the 1900s, in the 20th century, we had to send anthropologists to a remote area of Persia, Iran, outside the outskirts of any major city, and study a small group of vegans who were rigorously vegan, yet suffered not from B12 deficiency syndrome. And the anthropologists were curious, how did they get away with it? So we better study them. And they studied them and they figured out how it works. When you're under starvation of a nutrient, your body becomes very efficient for utilization of that nutrient, if it should get any, you know, at all. And this is just across the board. It's just a general, you know, notion or feature of the physiology. It improves its efficiency. And actually, it's very similar to free energy circuits. Very often, I'll do that. I'll give my free energy circuits as little energy as possible, not because I'm trying to power them, but because I'm trying to stimulate them, but not feed them, but get them to feel hungry enough to go get their own energy from somewhere else. And if they're designed properly, with the correct arrangement of reactive forces, they will. They will get it, as the simulator tells me. They'll get it from somewhere. They won't tell me where they get it from, unless I do that kind of experiment. Anyway, so it's normal for that to happen, for efficiency to increase when depravity is there, provided you're not dead. You know, you have some energy, just not a lot of nutrition to make you happy, you know, and satisfied, and so your system becomes very efficient. And that's the case with runners. Long-distance runners, they become very efficient with their metabolism, and they can consume all the food they want to, and they never put on weight, except for, you know, some muscle mass, because they're busy burning it up every day running. Anyway, well, this is the same way with B12. Now, what happened was the anthropologist studying those remote small group of vegan Persians, Iranians, or Persians, as they would prefer to be called, living in Iran, since Persia does not exist, but Persians still exist. Okay, we got that straight. What they discovered was that these vegan vegetarians were planting their poop in their garden, plowing it into the soil, spreading it around, distributing it, whatever, moving the soil around, whatever, planting their crops, subsisting entirely off of their own produce, whatever they produced, whatever it was that was in their diet. The anthropologists didn't go into that. You know, what did they eat? Simply, it was strictly vegan. That's all they said. But they did hint to one item of the diet was root vegetables, because they said when they harvested their root vegetables, they did not wash off the dirt. They simply cooked it with the dirt on, adhering to the sides of the root vegetables. And lo and behold, they studied further, they investigated further under the microscope and in the lab and whatnot, and they made the determination, the discovery, that the B12 is manufactured in the large intestine of mammals. It is not absorbed there. It cannot be, because the walls of the large intestine, the porosity is too small. It only accepts water-soluble nutrients such as water and sugar or whatever, you know, minerals. But it can't digest anything, in other words. And so it can't absorb anything larger than inorganic material such as water or salt. While the B12 bacteria of a healthy intestinal tract does not live it lives in the large intestine, but the B12 that it manufactures cannot be absorbed through the large intestinal walls. But it can be absorbed through the small intestine, yet the B12 bacteria in a healthy intestinal tract does not live in the small intestine. It lives in the large intestine. Now, because peristalsis only goes in one direction, it never goes in reverse. The only thing that goes in reverse is the stomach. You know, you can puke, you can hiccup. Mucus can go in reverse, you know, up the lungs and into the head and clog the head. But the peristalsis at the top of the throat and proceeds all the way to the anus, provided you have a fully functional peristalsis along the entire intestinal tract, it will always move downwards. It never stops, and it slacks off at nighttime, and it kicks back into service during the daytime hours. And that's why all of a sudden we want to poop in the morning if we're healthy. So it only moves in a downwards fashion. So that means that we are never allowed. Mother Nature designed us to never allow us to absorb B12 that we made ourselves. Now, apparently that's not the case with other animals. So I shouldn't say mammals, the human. Because we know the cows get by. What do? Eat their poop? I don't know. Oh, I'm getting ahead of myself. So what happens is Mother Nature, you know, when the Bible says, you know, Adam and Eve are supposed to tend the garden, well, yeah, they're supposed to have one to tend because their life depends on it if they're going to be vegan vegetarians. And a vegan vegetarian is the easiest thing in the world because you don't have to go anywhere to hunt game, you know, and the dad gets to stay home and be with the kids. So, and everybody works out, helps out in the community. The men don't have to go and fish. They don't have to hunt for game. They just stay home and, do chores, whatever that culture. I never studied the Native American culture, so I don't know what they did. But you have to wonder, how did they survive? Well, the Persians tell us how any primitive peoples who were totally agrarian and ate only vegan foodstuffs, how they survived from lack of B12. They planted their poop in their garden, and they did not wash off the dirt from anything they grew and harvested from under the earth. They cooked the earth along with the food, and it didn't destroy the vitamin. It sterilized any E. coli that might have been in the soil still, that might not have died over the course of the seasons of the growth cycle of the plant that had planted there. Maybe they planted their poop there too recently, I don't know. But cooking it would have killed off the E. coli, sterilized everything, made it safe to eat. And yet the B12 was there, created by the bacteria in the large intestine, but not available for absorption until the person took that B12 from their poop, mixed up with the soil of their garden, back into themselves, and had it move down past the stomach into their small intestine, and then they could absorb the B12. There wasn't much there, but it didn't matter, because their efficiency had been improved due to starvation of B12, so they were able to make use of it and avoid the symptoms, the neural degenerative symptoms of B12 deficiency syndrome. And I know because I went through it. I was a strict vegan for 35 years, not taking any supplements, just fasting or doing wheatgrass or juice fasts, a lot of exercise and fresh air and sunshine. And after 35 years, I started to notice what was happening. I'd been warned. I read all this material, but I thought, I don't think I need that. I don't think I have to supplement. Nor did I want to. I wanted to be a purist and do all natural. Little did I know, in order to be all natural requires that you grow a garden and blah, 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 and do what the Persians did and what the Native Americans must have done had we not destroyed their culture when we first arrived and studied them first. But we didn't. We were too busy teaching them Christianity and wiping them out with our germs and enslaving them, yada, 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 or just plain killing them off. So how do we know? We don't know. And I'm not even sure they know. Maybe they do know. Who knows? Because it's a feature that's so important yet so easy to overlook, whether or not you wash off the dirt from your root vegetables. Nobody would think to look. They'd think, how important can that be? Well, if you're a vegan vegetarian, it's a question between just about life or death, because if you're debilitated with B12 deficiency, doesn't that kill people eventually? I know it, at the very least it maims you. And you can recover once you start taking B12 again. So maybe it doesn't kill you, but it certainly could mess with you. At the very least, it'll mess with you. So this is something we need to learn. Because if ever there should come a time in the future or near future in which we have to subsist on our own efforts alone and we don't have the convenience of running to the market to buy whatever we want, we're going to have to learn the hard way. And a lot of people are going to be making mistakes not knowing any differently because nobody has bothered to study Native people's culture and investigate how they and ask these questions of how they managed to survive. Who would think, because animal products are ubiquitous. They're so suffused in the Western diet that we actually have problems from overconsumption, heart disease, cholesterol buildup, blah, 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 lack of exercise or whatever. I mean, my grandmother in the old country, they were lucky if they got a piece of meat once in a while. And you know who ate it? Not the kids, the parents on Friday, on Shabbos. They were the ones. And it was usually a piece of meat, the way my grandmother would show me, it was smaller than the size of your hand. It was like a quarter, a fifth of the size of the palm. It was smaller than the palm of your hand. It was probably half that size or less. And that's if they were lucky and only the parents got to eat it. They had cows, they had fish, that's true. So enough of that analogy, that doesn't work. Anyway, so the point is we got to know what to do in case we need to do it. And this is what we need to do. We need to have our own garden and not be too, have the latrine, way out far away. No. See, that's Western culture, to have a potty in a little potty booth, and you go and be private, so nobody sees you pooping in the garden, and oh my God, look at their genitals, oh my God, No, you go and you poop in the garden, you plow it in, you spread it around, and you make sure you cook your vegetables and don't eat them raw, and you'll be okay. I've done that experiment, so I know what E. coli is like, what dysentery is like. I had to find out these things, but now I don't. But see, now that I know about silver hydroperoxide with MSM to stabilize it, but silver hydroperoxide in general, E. coli is not an issue. I can lick my butt all I want to, lick my finger and poke it up my butt. So long as I dip my finger in a solution of silver hydroperoxide both before and after each time I stick it up my butt, because it'll sterilize all the germs on the finger, sterilize the anus, sterilize the mouth with the poop residue that I was licking off. I did this experiment for over a month because I did it twice, a long time ago and then more recently, several years ago. And I wanted to see if I could do what Paracelsus did when he cured people of bubonic plague. He used isopathy, which is a sub-branch of homeopathy, and he used such a tiny amount of the patient's poop, he literally took a needle and he stuck just the pointed end of the needle into the patient's poop, just enough to get a teeny little piece of the person's poop, or just to get some of the residue on the tip. You know, so little. And then he made a little pill out of a piece of bread that he made a slit halfway through it on one side, and then he wiped the tip of the needle with the inside surfaces of the slitted side of the piece of bread. And then he gave them to swallow that, so it was like a pill, and they cured. It cured them. Isopathy is being as the, I think, as I recall, the definition of isopathy is you take the body, the production of the body, something that the body produces, you know, some fluid, solid matter, whatever, something that, you know, could be earwax, something from the body of the patient, and you use it in some manner or another to treat some disease or illness or symptoms or another. And in this case, this is what worked to cure people of bubonic plague. Well, when anthrax was happening, I thought, hell, I might as well suggest this technique to all the to the CDC and all the state health departments. And, you know, they thought I was nuts. They didn't even answer me most of the time. And the few times they did, they thought I was nuts. Did you send us this email? We're not sure. We had to ask. And one or two actually got humorous and joked with me. Oh, so you eat your poop, huh? Well, I thought to myself, no, I don't. Maybe I should try this suggestion from the annals of history from 4 to 5 centuries ago and see what would be the consequence. Well, yeah, after 3 weeks of my normal constipation, I started getting dysentery, and I tried everything I could to alleviate the dysentery so that I could still keep up with this type of treatment modality that I had learned by reading it on the internet concerning Paracelsus. Paracelsus and Nostradamus were the only two people in history that we know of that actually cured people of bubonic plague, other than their own genes, you know, got them to survive, their own genetic material, but most people died off in Europe, were wiped out, but except for the wealthy who had a ton of silver in their diet, and they were flush with argyria, such as Queen Elizabeth I. They hid it by putting makeup all over their face. Dare them to go out in public without any makeup to cover up the argyria. So that's why we never see Queen Elizabeth I's portraits of her without makeup all over her face, because she was heavily endowed with argyria. So they were still afraid of coming down with bubonic plague because they didn't know about silver. And they took an excess because they didn't know, they were not trying to get any. They just, that was the nature of their urns in which they stored all their beverages. Their vinegar, their water, their milk, and their wine were all stored in silver urns. And so they got a ton of silver, far more than they needed to prevent argyria, to prevent bubonic plague or cure them of it. But still, they avoided it, and they thought, oh, it's our blue blood, you know. Well, they were blue because the silver in their blood was combining with iron in the hemoglobin, causing them to become anemic. So, anyway. So, apart from that, Nostradamus and Paracelsus were the only two people we know of that actually cured people of bubonic plague. And I don't know how Nostradamus did it, but Paracelsus did it the way I just described to you, using isopathy. And I thought, okay, if it's good enough for bubonic plague, maybe it's good enough for anthrax. And so when the person emailed me back and making a joke, assuming that I did that, I decided to give it a try and see if I could alleviate dysentery and still get the treatment. Well, I was not able to at the time because I didn't know about silver yet. I learned about it later on. So at the time, I tried salt, I tried lemon juice, I tried wheatgrass, I tried... the best thing, actually, that worked the best was carob pod. You buy, it's the substitute for chocolate when you don't want chocolate. In the seed of the carob pod, because they ground up everything. When they make carob powder, they grind up everything. They grind the pod, which is a fruit, it's a legume. And it's like tamarind, but not as sweet. But they also grind up the seed inside the legume. And it's the seed that contains the principle that is very good at alleviating, I don't know if it kills it off completely, but it weakens the E. coli germ so that it's not so vigorous anymore. So it can relieve dysentery to some degree. And after World War II, when the countryside was devastated in Europe, They had nothing to eat. The peasants who survived having their countryside ravaged by war. But the carob trees survived. And so they ate carob until they could grow their crops. And there was a guy who walked around with a stick and a sack of acorns. And there's a book written about him, The Man Who Planted Hope and Grew Happiness. Nobody knows who this guy was. Unlike Johnny Appleseed, we don't know who this guy was. But he walked around, and every two paces or so, every couple paces, he'd stick his stick in the ground, stick an acorn in the ground, and then with the heel of his shoe, close it off, and then walk a few more paces. And Mother Nature made it possible for some of those acorns to sprout into oak trees. And very gradually, the countryside got back its watershed, its game, its, you know, flora and fauna, because the trees were there to hold the water. Otherwise, this countryside was becoming a desert. But he planted trees and oak trees, and everything else took off. And so people were able to go back to their farms and, you know, resume their farming. Anywho, I'm telling you a lot of stuff that has nothing to do, but, you know, I just comes to me, so I figured I'll share it with you. Why not? Let's see. So where were we? How did I get there from trees, planting, war? Oh, anthrax. Okay. Somehow I got to trees. I can't remember why. So, anthrax. So, dysentery. Ah, yes, dysentery. Carob. That was it. Okay. Now I understand. But I couldn't come up. So, silver, hydroperoxide, when silver is reacted against, when very thick colloidal silver, so thick that it's not colloidal anymore, it's murky, you know, thousands of parts per million, we're talking many thousands of parts per million. So murky, you can't shine a flashlight through it because it's cloudy. You can't see through it. And you react that, you dilute it down with water and react it with pure food-grade hydrogen peroxide, and you keep it stirring in a stir bar, you know, lab equipment setup for several hours, like 12 hours or so, and you keep adding an ounce or a tablespoon of the hydrogen peroxide at a time, a little at a time, eventually it'll stop fizzing. It'll fizz initially because it's reacting with the silver, and then when it stops fizzing, then you know, and then you let the hydrogen peroxide bubble out of solution for another 12 hours as it keeps stirring, then you know you've added enough. It's saturated with hydrogen peroxide. All of the silver has reacted with the hydrogen peroxide, losing one atom of, let's see if I remember, one atom of hydrogen. So now hydrogen peroxide is water with an extra oxygen. So you retain the extra oxygen, but when you react it with silver, but you lose one hydrogen atom. And the silver fills that missing spot where the hydrogen used to be. So now you have silver, one atom, hydrogen, one atom, and two atoms of oxygen, two moles of oxygen. And so it's Ag1H1O2 is the formula. It's not tremendously stable, but it's a far more stable than colloidal silver is. Colloidal silver, I never found it to last more than 3 weeks tops. It starts to deteriorate in about half a week to 1 week if you're lucky. And then it's no good anymore once it's deteriorated to sludge that fell to the bottom of your beaker. So when you react silver with hydrogen peroxide in this manner, you can store it in the cool of like your cupboard for years. And it'll only slowly deteriorate. It will, but very slowly. You know, the silver will come out of solution and fall to the bottom, but very, very slowly. And the stuff is limited in how you can use it because it is slightly unstable. I mean, if you drink it, it'll come apart right away. The only best place to put it is exterior, topically applied to the body. But that's not bad because it's so highly bioavailable. The body absorbs it right through the skin, and it'll go immediately to the areas underneath the skin. So what I like to do sometimes, I don't make a habit of it, but when I feel like it, which is not too often, I'll put silver hydroperoxide with MSM in my ear canal and let it sit there, and it'll absorb into my brain and help regenerate brain tissue. The stuff is uncanny. In its bioavailable format, it literally stimulates regeneration of the physiology. To a limited degree, but it's really, you know, depending on how old you are. The older you are, the less it'll help you. Anyway, why did I get to that? So if you had to eat your own poop and you didn't have a garden, you didn't have time to spend waiting for the garden to come around. I mean, nobody gets B12 deficiency overnight. So if you could plant a garden right away, you wouldn't have any problems. Because well before a deficiency of B12 would show up, you'd be able to harvest your root vegetables and the residue of poop that you planted in your garden, and boil your root vegetables and consume a little bit of your poop in the course of doing so. But of course, why wait? You could take your poop and boil it, a little piece, not a lot. You can make a tea out of it because you really don't need much. All you need is the B12, and you don't need much, but you'd have to boil it and make tea. Of course, it would taste nasty. In the soil, you don't taste it because it pretty much gets decomposed, see, by natural forces. Am I a little excited? Am I stammering? So you don't get that awful flavor, and you boil it so you don't get the E. coli, if there is any E. coli in the soil. And there's probably various bacteria and parasites in the soil, so you kill them off when you boil your root vegetables or whatever it is you do to cook them, fry them or whatever. And so you get your B12 and you won't have a problem. But if you didn't have a garden and you wanted to get the B12 right away, you could make a tea out of your poop somehow. And dilute it down, hopefully, and thus sterilize it and still get your B12 if you had a healthy colon. See, this is all about, because, you know, the balance of bacteria in the colon have to be just right. It can't be all yeast and nothing else. You got to have some lactobacilli in there mixed in with the yeast. Nobody usually has lactobacilli alone unless you're an infant, a newborn maybe, but living on mother's milk. But even then, for how long? You know, yeast is in the environment to such a degree that it usually makes its encroachment to whatever becomes open and you know, a non-sterile condition becomes infected with yeast almost right away, just about right away, because it's in the air all the time. That's why mushrooms are able to spread so well, because they're in the air too. They're spores, but yeast spores are there too in the air. So anywho, yeah, it would depend a lot on the health of your colon, too. But you'd be recycling your B12, let's put it that way. You wouldn't let it go to waste, at the very least. And then maybe in time, your colon would get healthier because you'd be on a sparse diet, a sparing diet. You know, it may be that, you know, colons get unhealthy only because we eat such a rich diet. You know, we eat too much of everything. And oh, well, anyway, I thought it was necessary to talk about this because it impressed me that we never bothered to study the Native Americans. If we had, we would not have had to go to Iran to study the Persians, the vegan Persians who were living there on a strict vegan diet, to figure out where their B12 came from. You know, it's shameful. But, you know, we've done a lot of shameful things and nothing new. But, you know, this is a reminder. More to be guilty, to feel guilty over, if you're so inclined, you know. Maybe you're not. Maybe you could care less. But I'm shocked. I don't know. That's why I'm making this recording.